This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome back to the JMS Boxing Podcast with me, John.
I'm Sam.
And today we have got Lenny, the main man filler. Thank you for joining us today.
That's a pleasure, lads.
Yeah, how's it going?
Yeah, going really well at the minute. I'm just four weeks out of a fight. Camp's going well, weight's dropping, coming off nicely, so yeah, I'm happy.
Yeah, we've obviously had conversations with your trainer, Lee, about like your weight-wise. So we'll come to that anyway, but I've got there's some funny things that he said, so I'll get to ask you about them.
I can imagine what he said.
What I like to do, just get into it, strip it right back to how did you first get into boxing?
Yeah, listen, I'm a travelling boy. We come from a travelling background. Most travelling boys walked in a boxing club at their age, and I've got three brothers, and we're all like similar ages. Like,
yeah.
There's not big gaps between us. So it's a constant fight in my house. Do you know what I mean? So we all boxed, and so I just carried it on, and the other boys never. Do you know what I mean?
When did you start? How old was you when you started?
I walked for a gym. I think I was about 9 or 10 years old.
Right. So early on.
Yeah,
then.
I boxed amateur when I was 14, and I jumped out of it, and then obviously you do, didn't you? You start seeing birds and
bits
and pieces.
The usual stuff. When you started, what gym did you start at?
I went to Westry, ABC in Maidstone. It was in Mangravit at the time. That's when I first walked. That's how long ago it was. They ain't been there for years. Then they moved to Parkwood, was in Parkwood. And then I boxed there till I was about 14. I lost in some counties, I think I lost in, and then I just packed it up from there. And
that's
everything else.
The old side life, because obviously boxing is quite disciplined, isn't it? So it's a bit.
Yeah, it is quite. And as a kid, I wasn't very disciplined at all. Do you know what I mean? I was a bit of a radical, so I just like doing what I wanted to do.
How many amateurs did you have?
I only had four. I had four, and believe it or not, I lost all four of them. And it put me right off boxing. It did. Like, I was on the wrong end. Anyone knows amateurs, and I can see it in sales and some moody like decisions. But yeah, I had four good fights. I lost all of them, but it was some good entertaining fights. Like I said, the last one was in the Sun County finals. I got buyers, then got to there, lost against a good kid. And it sort of just put me off it. You know what I mean? After that, it's like
in front of family, friends.
Yeah, like, I always, even when I was younger, me and my brothers, we always pull a good crowd. Like, there'd be 30, 40 people come up with us to the amateurs. But after that, I was like, I can't bother this. And then I sort of stopped and got back into it when I was about 19.
Okay, so you still, what brought you back into it? Just thought, fuck it, I'll give it a fucking...
Mostly it was just for fitness and training. I was going down, I started going back down Terry Hadaway's gym, and we was doing a bit of unlicensed with him.
Okay.
And then it was just a bit of a laugh. And then obviously I met Lee Page. Lee said, you've got to start taking this a bit serious because you could do something here, and then I ain't looked back since.
when you went back to the gym, I think it was it when you went back or when you went back, you were you quite a big, like you said that you put your weights on shoulders.
Yeah,
and...
yeah. Like, I'm I ain't very tall anyway, but when I put weight on it, don't really go around my, it does my belly a little bit, but my shoulders get big, my legs get big, I look like I'm doing weights.
That's where you want the weight to go. Me, I'm like fucking the dad bod light hitting and stuff, do you know what I mean? But he was saying that it all goes, you just shoulders.
Shoulders, I come out wide, like, I go to like extra large t-shirts. You know, I'll get to about 13 and a half stone, I have to get big t-shirts because my shoulders go so wide.
How are you at the moment?
I'm sitting about 11 and a half at the minute.
So you're sitting 11 and a half, but you'll go...
Listen, if I blow up, I'll blow right up. I'm a greedy cunt.
When you're in boxing, you're disciplined. The moment you go...
The moment that fight's over, I'll be getting a pizza on my own. That morning, I'll have a fry up. And then that day, we'll have a takeaway. And then that night, if I'm hungry, you know, I'll have a cup. You know, I'm a
that Paddy Pimlet diet.
Yeah, I'm a greedy cunt. Like,
or the Ricky Atten one.
Yeah, that's it.
That Ricky Atten diet.
But I never had a gym. I just love food. You know, I think when boxing is said and done, whatever happens, I think I'm just going to be obese. And I'm going to be happy about it as well.
You're going to spend your career being nice and skinny, stripping down. And when it's all said and done, 50 years old. Yeah. You're just like...
It's funny saying that though, because before I ever turned professional and a diet wasn't a thing, I never had it. It's like I've almost got myself an eating disorder, because before that, I wasn't a big eater. I was always sat around 13 stone, but I wasn't I wasn't a big eater. I'd eat once, twice a day, but then when it comes to the point where I had to diet, I couldn't have it, then all of a sudden I wanted it. Flicking through Instagram and watching little clips of food and things like that.
Yeah. Just torture yourself.
Myself,
I was going to say, you're torturing yourself, this geezer's doing beef Wellington, but I can't have that because I need to be this weight. What weight do you normally fight at?
So championship is 147 or welter.
Right, okay.
Lee thinks he can get me down to super lightweight, but... I can't see it coming. Mm-hmm. I walk around like a crackhead. Now and I get near to weight anyway. But
come on, Lee, don't do me like that.
Yeah, I think that 10 stone mark's a little bit off for me. I've had a nutritionist say you'll probably get there. He said, but
it's about the edge.
It's about
lay it down the line in the end of the career.
I'll probably move back if 147 starts to become a struggle, I'll just move up 153.
Yeah.
Do you find 147 easy to get to then?
Oh, yeah, it's not too bad. Do you know what I mean? Because I walk about at 11 and a half and I can start cutting 4 weeks out.
Yeah.
So now I'll be able to cut and start coming down. Walk into that week.
You used to fight heavier in your life.
It's
13 stone.
Whenever they come, I fight anyone. It was just a good crack. Do you know what I mean?
So you done the Terry halfway gym and you went on the unlicensed stuff. What were you doing in and around the unlicensed scene?
Oh, I was just going out for fun. I was boxing 80 kilos, 85 kilos. I didn't really give a fuck. I was going everywhere.
Was you a ticket seller?
When they're showing Mason, I sell tickets because I can always do a ticket. So it was all right. Do you know what I mean? I box on Peter Stone shows a lot. Like I say, it's all right for me to sell tickets because I can sell tickets. I don't know, everyone wants someone to see me going to get my head punched in, but...
it's a good thing because tickets come up very regularly and then people say the hardest part is ticket selling. Mm. So if you find it easy to sell tickets, then...
Yeah, well, I'm not saying I find it easy to sell tickets because anyone that sells tickets, it's big ag. I'm getting to the point in my career now, I don't really want to keep selling tickets. Yeah, I want to be in 50-50 fights. I want that purse bid. I want to be paid. I want titles around me. I want to fight for titles. So it's just another thing. You're going for a 12-week grueling camp. This one ain't been so long because I got last minute call 6 weeks. But it's a 12-week grueling camp. You've got to worry about weight and then you've got to worry about getting fit. You've got to worry about sparring. You've got to worry about everything else. But then on top of that, you've got to worry about tickets. What if you don't do enough tickets? What if you don't do this? What if you don't do that?
Because this is 50-50 over in Grays, isn't it?
It's 50-50. Yeah, I got a call 6 weeks ago. I'm just saying, I've been struggling to get up for anything. The thought of me going back and boxing a journeyman, it was getting to me. I was sort of falling out of love with the sport over it because I was thinking to myself, I don't want to keep doing this. I'd rather be in a 50-50 win, lose, or draw, right? I know that I've come now, people's paid the money to watch me.
Yeah.
Anyone that knows boxing, they know generally if you're going to box a journeyman, you're going to win. Not all the time. Yeah. Cause there's been some big upsets.
There's some good lads out there.
There's some real good journeymen out there. I fought a couple of good journeymen, but not a couple of about five or six good journeymen, and I can say fuck me,
But people don't realise that journeymen are actually talented. That you'll go, they'll look at the record and they'll go, oh, he's had 50 odd losses. Yeah. But, and then they'll go, you should go through quite easily.
Yeah.
But they're there to survive and they know every trick of the trade.
They've got a job to do, the survivors. But then you get some people like for instance, Kareem Khan, I boxed him and it was an eye opener. I was like, wow, this kid's trying to take me off. Yeah. Kevin McCauley started calling me a placky cunt inside the ring. I've seen him knocking his head back. I'm thinking, what is he saying to me? Like, you can't say this.
We got caught. We got Lee told us about that as well. So we'll come to that as well. How did it then become you turning pro then? Where did that come from?
Just started training. I originally said to Lee, I'd like to have a go at MMA. I've done the unlicensed. Then I thought, you know what, I'm going to have a look at MMA. I don't quite fancy it. And then, because I enjoy wrestling. Like, we went there and
did you stuff. Because I've come up with Evolution sometimes. And I'm going to see you and the gentleman.
Joe Draper.
Yeah, Roland Bat. Yeah, that gets me. Because I'm best mates with fucking Angus. that's another story, please. and then he said to me, like, I wouldn't do him. I'd turn over if I was you. Like, he took me down there. Then we went to Ray Askell's and started sparring with some of the boys, Luke Gibbo and that. Then we met Joe Alfeed and Joe offered me a contract and it sort of went from there, really.
Because you didn't know Joe beforehand, did you?
No.
No, so you've just turned up and gone, do you fancy it? And then I'm guessing he's had a look at you.
Yeah.
What was the conversation there then? Because
he watched me spar Luke, Charlie, Shane and Danny and that. And he started, you think you're good enough? And then he offered me a contract, I think one fight in, then he got me sparring with Luke Campbell, went up there, and then that's when it really hit him. He took me up there and he was going, like, Jesus, this kid's fighting world titles, you're giving him a real hard time, yeah?
Yeah, we heard, obviously, you walked out with a smile on your face, and you walked out, even though you'd like, but Luke Campbell's nice, but you walked out.
Yeah, well, they said, because he boxed at lightweight, but he was 71 kilo at the time, and I was 72 kilos, so there's a kilo in it.
Yeah.
So, and he walks around at 71 kilo a lot of the time. Like, that's what they don't understand. A lot of people don't understand about professional boxers. They're never,
that way
they're not, they're, if they're a 63 kilo fighter, they're not walking around at 63 kilo, they're walking around at 70 kilo.
Then they're cutting.
And then they're getting nutritionists and this and that and to help them cut.
Yeah, and then they're cutting weight. So your first fight then, it was Dale Arrowsmith?
Arrowsmith, yeah.
Yeah, Al.
A decent fight. He was a good journeyman, been around the block a little bit worried. I started watching some of his videos. He knocked a couple of kids out, like it wasn't supposed to. I was like, fucking hell, Joe's put me up for it. Yeah. I think I ended up putting him over in the third. He was a nice fellow.
That was Maystone Leisure Centre, wasn't it?
That was Maystone Leisure. I packed that place up. 365 tickets, I think.
Cool, bloody hell. That's no wonder Joe liked you there.
I'd play absolutely rocking, like, honestly. Like I said, I think I grew up in Mason, so Mogan Park for me. I was down there Saturdays and Sundays swimming when I was 10, 11, you know, like, and even the council estate next door, they could get out the front door and in 2 seconds they're in the venue. I sold about 30 tickets on there. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So, I just packed the place.
And then, mate, I bet the atmosphere was decent
unreal.
For you.
Yeah. Unreal, yeah.
So you went with that and then you had Chris Jenkinson?
Yeah, Essex. That again, hard fight, I started watching these. He took boys out of the Olympics, start distance, and give them good runs for their money. And I said, fuck, you know. That was a hard night's work in Essex,
Yeah, because he, for a journeyman, he had 10 wins as well. And that's
and there was good wins and all. There wasn't just nobody. There was good wins he had.
So you're finding, how are you finding the camps as well at this point? Because if are you finding the discipline?
Yeah, like I say, that journeyman thing for a lot, I lost my license just before Christmas. I'll get back into that's another story completely as well. But I was struggling, it took me ages. I just got my Channel 5 break. They were saying I didn't have the ticket, I was getting paid. It's I can see something now. Then we lost that license and now. Then it was we had 7 or 8 months when I never had no license. I was putting about, I went out to Spain for a little while to try and get my head straight, keep myself back in training.
Yeah.
Then I come back and it was just as soon as I got this call, my head's flipped back around again.
Now we're back into the swing of things as well. And then, like you said, Kevin McCauley as your third fight. So Kevin McCauley's a good journeyman, though.
Mate,
one that
fucking worry. You see him, it's the first time I've seen him box a few times, and when he come that day and we both weighed in, I was like, fuck me, this cunt's got a six pack. I've never seen him with a six pack. Why does he look so in shape? Like, and he's got a new bird there with him, and I was like, fucking, this cunt's gonna try and take my head off.
Was this off the back of sparring? Was it Tommy Coyle in Hull? Was it Tommy Coyle?
No, Luke Campbell, and then we went up and sparred Robbie Davis Jr.
Right. That was it, Robbie Davis Jr. Yeah. It was off the, so this fight
was off the back
off the back of that sparring, yeah.
And then like they are, the McGuigan said, do you want to slot on the show? I said, yeah, probably. We ended up doing, going up there and done all right. But they said, you got to box Kevin McCauley. Like, you got to be in a good fight. I said, yeah, all right, no worries. And mate, when he come in, I'm telling you, he was in shape. Like I say, he had his new bird there. Even the whips walking around said, I don't know who's got Kevin McCauley tonight, but they're in for an hard night's work. So, I'm sitting there, like, fucking, leave me alone. But yes, we've had some fucking great laughs. It was a little bit.
Did he explain after, or was it?
No, we had a handshake afterwards. He had a chase. Don't worry about all that. It was just fucking getting in your head, and we had a laugh. Do you know what I mean? He's actually a nice fella. He friended me on Facebook a little bit after that, and we are still not staying in touch, but
forth, yeah. And then you went to workshop, Scott Hillman.
Yeah, Scott Hillman. That was not long after, I don't think.
It was just a month after.
To get out, he was like 12. I had to go and have a load of food before I weighed in because he come in at like 12 and a half stone. And Joe said, you're going to have to eat something or do something. So I put a pair of tracks bombs, ate a load of food. And I'm still like adding in by half a stone. I really tried putting it on.
It's stones in your pockets. Like, do the stone thing, right?
But yeah, that was just a run out fight. He was quite a nice fella. I thought, who had that? That's someone in my corner. Now, Sam Latham had him in my corner. He was going, you've got to stop him. Why aren't you stopping him? So I can't stop him. I'm trying to.
Again, just on the retreat, innit? Where they're not.
Yeah, he's been around the block so many times. And like I say, he's normally in with like 13 stone boys, like big boys, middleweights and super middleweights. So
he's big buck Danny, isn't he?
Yeah, so he's used to power. You know what I mean? I rocked in and tried my hardest to make 12 stone. I couldn't make it.
And then Kareem Khan.
Yeah, that was an eye opener. Like a little tubby Indian kid, and I thought, fuck me, I'm putting him away. Like then mate, he started doing stuff. I said, Jesus Christ, like losing. And when he said afterwards, I think he had like a fair few amateur belts. Like done all right.
Right. And then because what again, you say talk about ticket selling. A lot of you can sometimes geezers that are really talented just can't sell tickets, so they end up going to journeyman. Paid. It's good money to get paid.
Oh, mate, a journeyman earn more money than fighters most of the time when they're trying to like make a go of it. Because they're out fucking once a week if they're a good journeyman, they can work once, twice, like. Three times a month, realistically.
Yeah, and people don't understand. People just look at the records, like casual fans will just look at the records and be like, well, why are you not going through him? And you're like, well, I am, but these guys are decent, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they are. Like, I think Mick Mills is a prime example. Mate, if that fella put the work in, trained hard and got down to a proper weight, because he could probably be a lightweight.
Yeah, probably could.
But he can punch like an horse kick. And I can remember the first time I sparred him, like,
little
tubby fella. And then all of a sudden, he's southpaw, he's gone on the back foot and caught me off the ropes. From Jesus Christ, I'm not going to hit one of them again.
He's heavyweight now. Was it last time we see him? And then you had Gabor Dimer.
Yeah, I lost my memory after that. He caught me in the back of the elbow. Six rounds. I paced him for the six rounds. And I couldn't. And all of a sudden, I went back to change rooms. And it's almost like I woke up. I was like, where the fuck am I? I lost 24 hours memory. I'd done a full hour and a half interview with IFL. Couldn't remember doing it. I'm like, the interview came out like a couple days later. I was fucking can't
remember. Don't
remember
any of that.
I had to go to hospital and everything off. That was weird. That was the weirdest thing ever.
So you're fighting journeyman at this point. Obviously, like you're sat here now, you've got ambition. After that fight, because I know the boxer series is coming next, but what's your ambition for that now? Like,
well, we always said the plan was we'd do three or four rounders, two or three sixes, and eight, and then push for a southern area. Yeah. That was always the plan. We wanted southern area within the 2 years of turning over. And then the ultimate box had come up.
How did that come up?
Just got a last minute call. Joe said, look, someone's dropped out. Do you want to go in? It's not a welter, it's a super welter. What do you think? Like, on the day, I've always boxed like around that 68, 69. So
yeah, yeah.
I said, yeah, no, right. He said, the prize money could be whatever, blah, blah, blah. He boxed 3 times one night on BT.
Good exposure. Good exposure.
Win, win or lose, it was good exposure.
And it was good exposure for you, yeah, as well, as we're going to find.
Shattering records. Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, so I said, yeah, go on, why not? We all sat down as a team, decided to go with it. And obviously, they'd done all right. I know I lost in the final, but coming to come out of Olympics was massive.
Yeah, we'll go on to that as well. We'll go on to that because I've got an opinion on that series because I went there and I watched. I think we were there, weren't we? Mm. So we were there for it. I know you went in, like, how was it going up there? Like the O2, because you've obviously boxed small hall shows. Yeah. Now you're at the O2.
Well, it was my first real like taste of like a little bit of them lights, camera action, that type of thing. Being on a big stage and. I loved it. Loved every minute of it. So I thought, this is me. This is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Did you find the like fighting, warming back up, fighting, warming back up, easy, hard, or?
Obviously, the first fight, I didn't do much in the first fight. It was a nice 36 seconds. It's nice for it. I had a good hour and a half rest there. So that was quite good. Second fight was...
That first fight is the boxer record knockout, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So for people that don't know, you have got the... And that's on Sky, because boxer's now obviously on Sky. Yeah. So that record holds over to Sky now where everyone sees it. And I think they replay it, but every time a boxer series comes out, you see the knockout with you on there.
Yeah, I like
it. So it's nice just seeing yourself on there. Did was you because the guys that you're fighting, they're not journeymen anymore.
It was just that. When they said, look, you're gonna fight boys that's done really well at the amateurs, you're gonna fight boys like when they announced that Stephen Donnelly said, look, you could eventually bump into him, he's from the Olympic, he's used to this free freeze fast work. Like, you've got your work hard, you've got to work hard on every one of these boys. And then I just got that stuck in my head. That was Lee telling me, you've got to work hard on any one of them. Got that stuck in my head. We had a good seven, 8 weeks notice. So I got that stuck in my head and we were just doing it in the gym. I was sparring freeze, getting out. I was having like 20 minutes, getting back in for another three. To be honest.
That's good to just get into the routine, innit?
To be fair, I think I'd rather fought for 9 rounds. Than three separate threes. I think I'd rather just stayed in there and continued to stand the 9 rounds.
Oh,
yeah, because you're warming up, you're coming back down, your adrenaline's going. Mate, that last fight, I remember going after that first round, I was going, whew, I sat down, I thought, I've only really done 5 rounds. It's like,
yeah.
But I feel like someone's kicked me out, I feel battered, like my whole body feels like absolutely exhausted.
And then, so that was what, after the Joshua Ejiofor?
Yeah.
That was after that, so you were trying to bring yourself down.
Yeah, right? It was just adrenaline, like you've won twice, everyone's screaming and shouting, and got cameras pushing your face, you're doing interviews afters, and you
want to sleep, but you can't because you just want to rest. So that, if I remember, was it Kingsley Bunky? Was massive, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Really tall. Is he 6 foot on it?
6'2", I think.
Yeah, I just remember the height difference as you come out, the height difference. That's and then most just... Because like I said, you got to the final, and when I looked at the, I think we had the discussion going up there, when I looked at that, and I looked, because I looked at the one that Grant Dennis was on, and I thought the one that Grant Dennis was on was all the fighters had a really good chance, and I thought it was quite 50-50. I just thought who would adjust to that, the platform that you're talking about, who would adjust and who has that style, because obviously when you're fighting over 10 rounds, you can have one style. When you're fighting over 3 rounds, it's that very much, I think, that aggressive.
Aggressive. You can't leave off.
With this one, I felt like the series was designed for a platform for Stephen Donnelly after the Olympics. I felt...
Well, it was... When we got in there, it was like BT, the studio, and even like the Ben Shalom, who runs that boxer, it was like...
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal.
Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons. This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Constantly, man. You never had to sell a ticket, man.
Like, yeah, we heard that you guys had to sell.
Yeah, we had to sell a minimum $5,000 of tickets.
That's
that Donnelly never had to sell a ticket. Come on, come, Miss Donnelly. Let's put you in the green room. Don't like sit you on your own.
Because you were going to walk off at one point, weren't you?
I said to him, look, I'll call it. I've done all right. I've done about 12 bags of tickets. I said, look, I'll call it. Fuck it. I don't care.
Mm.
Like, there's no. I'm getting treated. We're not having like fucking Larry hotels and this and that. I was getting this paid for, that paid for. I was being a bit of a diva there. When me and Leon all get to shows, you know, if things not going our way, we start playing up.
It's a fucking nightmare as well. Speaking to Lee, I mean, Lee's also right.
Yeah, he's good. One of the best. His trainer wise is one of the best because like he'd do everything in his power to make sure you've got the best advantage or you're being treated fairly. Do you know what I mean? He won't let Nank slide.
Yeah, it's the Stephen Donnelly then. Like, you coming out, like, how was the preparation for that? Because obviously he's Olympian.
It's the same thing. Like, we honestly didn't think we would, if we would went to points, no matter what happened, I didn't think we was going to get a decision. Like,
you're in a way fighter now, as a team,
in the final, we sat down and said, look, you've got to go out there, go off whatever. Got to either try and put him away. Drop him once or do something.
Yeah.
Even though he's a lot bigger than me, he said, you've got to try and do something because we're not going to get a point decision here. It's like, it is a bit of like a own fire away fight type thing. And so I just went out, fucking give him everything I had for a couple of rounds. And
so you said you've done 12K tickets then?
Yeah.
That's a lot. So you've not only, and they're treating you like shit.
Yeah, more or less. It wasn't just me, it was the others as well. But obviously, I come in and I was the bookies underdog. I was the...
I remember the bookies. I think you were last on there, and I laughed. I was like, when I watched, because I sat there and watched them all, and I said, to be fair, I think we did win. And this is not me, like, I'm not even trying to blow smoke up your ass. This isn't something. I said the same with Grant as well. I thought you was going to get to the final. I don't think anyone was beating Stephen Donnelly.
No.
And there was no one, and that's me being honest. I thought the whole thing, when I watched everyone, because I literally sat down before we went because I wanted to put a bet on for the whole lot. And when I sat down, I was like, there's Stephen Donnelly's just going to, I think, go and win this. I think it's designed for him.
I wouldn't say it was designed for him, but as soon as they entered him in, it was like, right, we've got an Olympian now. I think their hope was to let him win and then sign with Boxer.
Yeah, put and him on a platform.
I think he lost his license, I think, after.
He had, I think he had like a Twitter spat with Grant Dennis, his last opponent.
Yeah.
I don't know how you say his name.
Njagua.
Yeah, I don't know. But it was, I think he rated like being racist, I would say. And I don't think
I did see something. I don't think it was nice what he said, but.
So you've had the Boxer, you've had the experience. What happened after that then? What was the discussions after that?
Well, straight away we was talking like Southern area.
Yeah.
He said, look, we'll have one more fight. Have one more fight, go into the 8-rounder. Then the end of the year, next year, we'll hit the ground running. We'll get a 10-round eliminator or for the Southern area.
You got in the ring. You had MJ Hall after that. You got quite quick.
Yeah, quick straight after that. We had, I think it wasn't long after that, was it?
No, it was about it was 2 months.
Yeah,
or so, just a month and a half actually. It was a month and a half.
So we got back straight back out. Had the MJ Hall fight and then Bermain Sanchez over 8 rounds. That was going to be that was the 8 rounds I needed to complete to. I think like if you ain't with Matchroom, I think you got to do all Matchroom. A lot of big promotion. You've got to do an 8 rounder to qualify for.
So you were. Was the MJ Hall fight just to keep
that,
in the ring?
That was a tick.
Just to stay like there, make like keep going, and then the Bermain Sanchez, the because now you're he's back. This was a winning record to then go in, and Bermain Sanchez was with what I have heard and know about him. It was an hard bastard.
It was an hard night's work, like. He'd been in around the block. All right, he boxed a weight below that, but he'd been in around the block. He knew what he was up to. He has won titles. He's been 10 rounds and things like that. So it was just a good test for me. And we was always Lee would always when we was training, we said, look, we'll try and get these 8 rounds in. Let's see how you feel. If you can put him away. But I felt some of the shots he dug in, and I thought, you know what, let's just try and get this win here. Got the 8 rounds, got a win. Then that, it was supposed to obviously be the, and then the lockdown come in.
The COVID hit. Before we go into COVID, I've got to ask you about this. I've been told a story about the Badger Slayer.
Oh, yeah. Now that was mental. Like that night, I don't know where it came from. I just made a load of shit up. Like talking to Steve Bunce, was laughing, joking, because he said, "Oh, do you live in a caravan?" I said, "Yeah, I'll tell you a story in a minute." And I was like, "I made a load of shit up," and it just fucking went mental. Like, everyone started calling me the Badger Slayer.
So, what's the story of the Badger Slayer then?
Oh no, he said, "Well, you live in the caravan." I said, "Yes." I was just joking. I said, "We never had no windows. I used to get badgers coming all the time, and I had to fight them to get them out." And we started laughing, and that's when everyone started calling me the Badger Slayer. Like, even the postman's calling me the Badger Slayer. Like, he watched it, and I'm like, "No," and he's like, "What's happening?" And he's like, "Here, Badger Slayer," and he's giving me mental.
Because also the other thing, I'm sorry, I know we're going back to the boxer. Is the other thing. Is that you and Steve Donnelly for the last fight ended up in the same...
Yeah, I wouldn't move. So we've been in the same change room all night, like...
Yeah.
Because obviously they must have thought I was going to go out the first round. He was going to stay in it. So I'd have been out of change, he had his own change rooms. Obviously I won, so we stayed in again. I won again, we stayed in again. He won again, so he was in the final. I was like, who's going? I'm not going. Then the birds come in, "No, can we move you here?" I was like, "No, I've been here all night, I'm not going." He was like, "I don't care." I said, "I've seen him warm up all night. You've seen me warm up all night. I am not leaving this changing room for no one."
Oh, a middle game as well.
Yeah, right? I didn't give a fuck. I swear they'd have had to drag me out of that changing room.
The you and Lee just kicking off, right? So COVID hit. How did you find it? Because I think a lot of people, especially people we've had on, like Charlie Shane, Mick Mills, COVID seemed to have ruined a few careers along there, unfortunately. And small hall boxing, especially, it's taken a massive hit.
Yeah, it has 100%. It fucked a lot of people. Like, for me, I wasn't sure. We didn't even know it was going to happen. Like, it was a crazy old time. You never seen anything like that in your lifetime. Like, you've got to stay in, you're not allowed outdoors. And then I went on all this straight afterwards. So, and I was running on the sand and I'll come back. We weren't even sure what was going to happen. My mum ringing me. I was in Egypt and they was going, like, "You got to get home. Like, they're not going to let you back." And I was running on the sand and I ended up doing my knee, twisting my knee. So I couldn't really do no running on ankle for about 6 months anyway. But it was just like everything, I stayed indoors too. I couldn't get to a gym, couldn't do anything else. Actually, mentally torturing. Good to spend a lot more time around the kids, but there was some like pros do, but most of it was just shit.
Boxing's a selfish game, isn't it?
It is a selfish game, yeah. And the amount of hours I spent away from my own kids trying to do something I love. Do you know what I mean? Like, where realistically, if I wanted to go and get nine, I wouldn't have earned no more if I wouldn't have got a 9-to-5 job and then come home every night to them, where I'm going to the gym when they're going to school. When they come back to school, I'm back off to go to the gym again. So,
and imagine it's hard for like your partner and the kids and that, because you're going away and then you full-time?
I'm full-time training.
Because I know other people ain't got that luxury. So
no, but like I say, before the COVID hit, I had some good sponsors around me. Just let me train full-time. And then after they left, because obviously like a lot of companies went down here afterwards, and then I picked up a couple more good sponsors after, which allowed me to get back in the gym again when everything started picking up. And I was just training full time. I'm like, listen, I've got to go back to work. I've got to go back to work. It's one of them. Like, you do what you do, put food on the table. It is what it is. But I've just been lucky enough now. Just I've got the sponsors there just to keep me going.
Did you find your weight?
Oh, mate, I
bloomed up.
I walked back in the gym about when the first day we walked back in over recovery.
You looked like Lee Page.
I looked like Lee Page, yeah, little Page. I was about 87, 88 kilos. Fat.
If that's you saying fat, fucking hell.
No, but look, I'm not tall, I'm 5'7", so I was just like, everything was just, I just looked swollen.
So you got back to. Basically, back in the gym then, and you thought Peter Lefskri, a lot of them.
Yeah.
Alessandrov?
Peter Alessandrov. Yeah, he was a good fighter, to be fair.
Was he?
Over six rounds.
Shaking the cobwebs off? Or?
Yeah, definitely. I think I'll put him out of there, but the night before, we made weight. It was 24 hours, made weight. Then we went and had, and then I just... being a greedy cunt again. We was in Essex, so we were staying, the fight was in Essex. We always get an hotel near the venue.
Brentwood.
For the night before, so I'm not around the kids, not around any distractions that night. I can have a good night's sleep. Yeah. Lee and that's all there. But that night we went straight to, I said, come and go to the sheets. So I made myself an absolute fucking pig in there. And I'll come back to the hotel. I'm sitting there, I'm rolling about. Fucking couldn't have shit. I was like, absolutely done myself.
Turned up like the Michelin man the next day.
That's what I did. And I was warming up. I'm thinking, oh, my belly's rumbling. Fucking, he's like, you're out in about 10 minutes, so you'll take these gloves off me. So I had to take the gloves off me. I'm wiping my hands, trying to get shit on my wraps. Fucking, mate, it's just fucking headache. And still, like, I'm warm to the ring. Do you know how long you've got that bloated feeling you can't get rid of it? Yeah, I was quite in the ring, man. I was thinking, fuck me. Good thing he never went to the body. If he'd have went to the body, I think I'd have shit myself. Fucking...
just got a damn brand down your leg. Yeah, like.
One of the Denzel Bentley. And what's his name? Light heavyweight. Could just beat. He's got British title.
Fabian.
No.
Light heavyweight. Dan Aziz.
They was commentating. They said, Mr. Fuller, like, Fuller's looking sluggish here. Yeah? And I was like, I could hear him. I said, that's all the fucking sheesh I've had last night. and I carried on fighting and they was laughing. But yeah, I won't be doing that again, that's for sure.
And then back in again against Justin Menzies.
Justin Menzies, yeah, that was a bollocks of a fight. Annoying. I was like four pull-outs in like a week. Like, I wasn't sure if I was going to box or sold tickets.
This was your call.
Whose show was that on? That was a TM, was it a TM14 show, I think? Maybe, yeah, TM14 show, I think it was, yeah.
Are you still under, are you still under Joe? Or
no.
You went over MTK when
I was with MTK, and then obviously they folded. And then Lee and Adam Hart went off and done Let's Go Management. No, I signed, and I've been with them for the last
year. That's it, you're with Lee Eaton now. So when did you sign with MTK?
That was just before the lockdown, no. Just after the lockdown.
Right.
As the lockdown ended, I ended up getting a contract with MTK. It was nothing against Joe, because Joe's been a great man. He's still a good friend of mine now. Joe.
Everyone says that, yeah. Everyone does.
But like I said, like Joe even said to himself, like, I've got to a point where we can't really get you. We don't know what to do with you. Like,
yeah.
You got to, so it was like, I have to get with someone now who's going to be able to push me forward further. That's what we signed with MTK.
And MTK are obviously a good brand at the time. They, yeah. They
were the third top promoters in the country, rather than Frank Warren and Matchroom. So
I'd have put MTK alongside Mick Hennessy, that side of it. But then obviously the stuff that had come out with me.
I lost sponsors over that because obviously they said we can't be involved with anything that company does. And
really?
Yeah, I lost a couple of sponsors over it.
So that it was even big for you then when
lucky enough it wasn't like life changing sponsors. There was everything every sponsor I get I appreciate.
Yeah, of course.
But I'm saying like it wasn't the biggest sponsor ever, it was really helping me. But it was still I was thinking, fucking hell, like I'm only Simon, I'm not the mate.
And then it, obviously that side of it come out and then I can imagine the backlash of it with a lot of fighters.
It affected a lot of fighters, yeah. I think. For what I can hear, more high profile fighters, I think it affected more than anything. But even down to me, like, I've only just come out of small shows, or I'm trying to get into the big shows, and it's affecting me. So,
well, I imagine it actually will swing it the other way, because you see it affected the big shows, like Tyson Fury's, all the way. But I don't know. I didn't know it would have affected you. I didn't know it would have affected you. So, for context, the MTK folded because of they had links with was it Dan Killian?
Yeah, something like that.
And then it was all like the gang related or whatever. And then basically it had come out, and then everyone that was signed to MTK, like you said, which was massive at the time, they tried to sort of distance themselves, didn't they? But it sort of weren't. And then loads of people come out and defended, and it just got messy at the time, wasn't it? You can see it just got really messy.
Yeah, definitely. Like, a lot of boys didn't know where they was coming and going with the shows and what was going on, who they was getting signed with. And it was a good chance for Max Room and Frank to start snapping a load of fighters up, wasn't it? It was coming off of there.
Then Lee Eaton, obviously, because Lee Eaton, for me, I don't know like his backstory, but he's come from sort of the background.
Yeah,
he sort of boomed.
He was doing unlicensed shows when I first met Lee, and I was boxing on his shows. Like, that's because I've known him years. I've known him before I knew Joe, even.
And he's sort of he's now got quite a good stable.
Yeah, mate, it's a fair play to him. He's like, he must be one of the best up and coming promoters there is at the minute. Like, he will be massive, I think, Lee. I've known him for years. So for us, we're quite like friends anyway.
Yeah. And then that comes to Nathan Kaminsky. This is your next one.
Yeah, Nathan Kaminsky.
This is Brentwood. I thought it was a Greys, actually. So I didn't realise it was a Brentwood.
Yeah. 5-5-1. Yeah, I think he had quite a good amateur career. Funny enough, he lost to that Peter Alexander.
Okay.
Yeah, he lost to him. I think that's the only loss he's got, I think.
Yeah, he's only got his one down, one draw.
Yeah, I'm not going to take Nathan away from it, but...
What is this setting up then? Is it setting up for Southern Area? Is this to get the Southern Area?
It'd be a year out now. September, it'd been a year since I boxed last. So, like I said, I wasn't really getting up for no journeyman. And there's often, I couldn't really do it no more. For me, this next year or so, for me, is going to be a make or break year. Like, I'm 29 now, 30 next year. In terms of boxing, I know you
made me feel up there.
in terms of boxing, it's like you're getting on, you're coming.
Yeah,
like, there's obviously a perception like Grant Dennis, Benjamin Button. Benjamin Button boxing, he's still doing right, but no offense, I don't want to be boxing at that age. Like, I want to have been in and made my money and had a good career time, 33, 34, things are still going all right for me.
Yeah.
Because you can almost chase a dream too much. I know they say never give up hope and things like that, but I still want to have all my faculties intact before when I leave the sport. Yeah. I don't want to be boxing to 35, 36 and end up punchy, can't talk properly. Because I want to still enjoy my kids, and they're going to have kids, so I still want to enjoy time with them. And
you've got two boys.
Yeah, so
two little men.
Yeah. And I still want to enjoy time with them. So I want to... The boxing for me, if I can get in and over the next couple of years and earn a nice, not even the money side of it, if I can make a bit of a legacy for myself in the next couple of years.
What are you looking? Where are you looking to go? British?
European? I always tell myself sky's the limit, because you never know. You look at boys like Max Hughes. He was losing an area title fight. So now look at him. He's on the big stage.
Louis Green's
Commonwealth champion. I think I'm sparring him Saturday, actually. That's always the hard day's work. And, so the sky's the limit with it, really. But if I went out and fought for a British title and come close or lost in a real close fight, I'd think to myself, well, I've done a lot.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If I go and nick a European title, yeah, I know there's a European title fight on that night, and it's at welter as well, so... Who knows? And maybe get the winner out of that.
What's his name? The Wanderer, Reynolds. He's on that.
He's on that bill. There's some good fights in there. A lot of 50-50s on there. And like that European welterweight title fight. So who knows? Like, I might get one more fight in after this. And maybe challenge for the winner out of that. I think it's Constantine versus Dijon. for that,
let me look for
that title. So yeah, there's things like that.
If not Eton, but I'll take it, Southern Area.
Southern Area or the English, Danny Ball. Danny Ball's got the English. I wouldn't mind that fight.
Could be a good
who's Southern Area champion at the moment?
I'm not sure who's got Southern Area. Well, I think it may be vacant.
Oh, okay.
Maybe vacant at the minute. So no, I might even challenge for that. So yeah, I think maybe by the end of the year, maybe early next year, but I want to get one or two more fights to this, obviously, and then want to box again before the end of the year.
And this is, like you said, Geezer's winning record back into it. It's going to be a hard fight.
Yeah, it's going to be a hard fight. He's good. I've seen him box. He can switch self or orthodox. Do a little bit of everything back, box on the back foot, on the front foot, but I can do everything just a little bit better, I think.
Fair enough. Yeah, anything you want to add?
No, not really. It's a pleasure being here, really.
Yeah, no, before I stop, we like to ask all our guests to create the perfect boxer. So via attributes. So it's different attributes per different boxer. Mm. So I'm going to test a bit of your knowledge out here because I can see your face going. So if I was to say footwork wise, who would you say is
going to Manny Pacquiao.
What about punch power?
What, pound?
Yeah, yeah.
In area.
I see him knock out Steve Fulton. Chin, sorry.
Chin's got to be Golovkin for chin, isn't it?
Yeah, defensive skills?
Mayweather.
What about like attacking prowess?
Got to be that Mike Tyson, that absolute animal viciousness of him.
And then boxing IQ?
Got to be Mayweather again, I think.
So, thank you for joining us. So, you're obviously fighting. When you fight in
second September,
so that's it. So this, so this is going to come out after. But yeah. When you've, thank you for joining us, mate. When you finish your career, come back. Right. We can talk about the second.
Well, I'm slurring my words a little more.
Come back and talk about the second half. Cheers for joining us. If you liked the episode, follow us on all our socials, the JMS Boxing Podcast, and. On our Patreon, £3 a month. And they're all on there. We're all exclusive and when they come out first. Cheers.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.